Hello, everyone. Welcome. This is episode 5 of the Jolt Maver Sig podcast. Thanks for listening. As you know, Maver is always on the move. We have a newsletter coming out every few months. Yeah, make sure to check out our website. And we're always looking for submissions for everything we do, our newsletter, this podcast. If you're interested in getting more involved or joining Maver, if you're not already a member, then contact me. See our contact information on our website. Today's episode is an exciting one. It was recorded on the road. Myself and our coordinator, Eric Hawkinson, were lucky enough to travel to the South by Southwest EDU conference that took place in Austin, Texas this last March. Eric was talking about an AR app that he developed, so he had his own booth. And Eric was also lucky enough to be able to speak at the conference as well. So we have two segments this episode. We have Eric's speech from South by Southwest in its entirety. We'll listen to that first. And then Eric interviews JR, who's an educator and freelance developer who's helping a bit with the orientation app that Eric developed. All right, so we'll listen first to Eric's speech from South by Southwest. He's going to talk a bit about the use of AR and VR and AI in the classroom and some of the implications for this technology being rolled out in such a rapid way. So, all right, let's listen to Eric's talk.
Hello, hello. Is this working? Good afternoon, everyone. Wonderful to be here. I'm going to introduce myself in just a second here, but I'd like to start with one claim, one assertion, and one question, because it's really the theme that we're going to go through today and kind of pick up on these two things as we discuss this concept. And so the claim is, the assertion is that in this new world of AI and IoT and empathic computing, that augmented reality or mixed reality, diminished reality, any of those things that we're calling it these days, will be the medium of choice, will be the preferred way to communicate and convey information in that era, in that concept. So we're moving into a new mass medium, as it were. That's the claim. So the question is, like Mr. Bear in the Double Rainbow video, right? What does it all mean? Right? What does this mean if we're going to be communicating and connecting digital contents to everything physical and emotional around us as educators, as communicators, as people, just trying to learn in this new age of highly curated, highly individualized information. All right, so my name is Eric Hawkinson. Hello, everyone. Thanks. I got a couple of titles here up in there on the screen there, but probably most relevant today is I'm a research coordinator of a group called MAVER, Mixed Augmented Virtual Realities and Learning. We're based in Japan. I personally am based in Kyoto, Japan. We're doing a bunch of different research projects based around augmented and virtual realities and learning contexts, mostly in language acquisition in higher education. And I started a couple of projects, one of which we can see at the expo, and I'll tell you a little bit more if we have time. Right, so I'm Eric. So to help with my claim, right, the first thing that I was talking about, right, we're moving into this new mass medium, right? This is still argumented on, still debated on, but I think as we move forward, it's pretty much going to be the case, right? So if you think about mass mediums moving forward, we have, especially for learning context, we had our books, and then we moved on to cinema and radio, TV, right? They all changed the way that we learn, the way we communicate, right? In the book era, we cherished the wordsmith, cherished the word. We thought about their arrangement in certain ways. And that changed, of course, when we got to hear people's voices, right? And TV, a wink and a smile meant something extra to that. And it changed again, of course, with the internet. Now that is on demand. It's very important for learning for us, right? We're starting to get just-in-time information. And in the mobile era, that's even more prevalent, right? We're Googling things on the spot. We're learning things as we do them. And this is going to be exacerbated in many ways with augmented reality because now, in the mobile era, we have all of these things in our pockets. We have the book, the TV, the radio available to us at all times. We just have to pull it out of our pockets. But in this augmented era, That information is coming out of our pockets and it's going to be connected to a wall, an emotion, a person standing next to you. And it's not only that, it's going to be curated in a way that connects those things as being presented to you, sometimes without you even thinking about it or asking about it. So instead of saying, hey, Google now, you're going to be given curated content that something, some algorithm, something thinks that you might want to need. It's trying to predict. We're moving beyond asking questions right in time we need it and being shown things that we that some algorithm thinks that we need already. And so that's going to dramatically change the way we learn, the way we teach moving forward. So that's to help my claim to kind of explain that a little bit better. So to kind of explain this, I feel like sometimes it's best to give analogies, right? Augmented reality, if you haven't experienced it or haven't experienced it in different ways, it's really hard to explain. So the first analogy I usually give is the bridge, right? It works on several different levels, right? It's a bridge between the physical world and the digital world. It's a link between time and space. It can be all these great things, a bridge between two brains, two ideas, and things like that. It connects physical things to digital things or digital things to other things. It's connecting all these things together. But as a medium, it also has this bridge analogy connected to it as well, because the way that information is presented to you makes a big difference. Marshall McLuhan was a big person in the 60s that talked about the TV and how it's going to transform how we learn and think, and the massness of that communication, how it's broadcasted, had its own meaning in itself, right? We had a common base of reality with the evening news. Millions of people are watching the same information every evening, and that in itself changed the message from which it was broadcast. So the bridge for which this information is being presented to you, now it's more individualized, it's being curated for specific people. That common base might start to be diminished in different ways. But also, especially for first-time users or people that use it quite often, the complexity and the novelty of it can be something too. So pretend that island in the distance is what you're, the information you're trying to convey. So if you have this big, beautiful bridge going over it, you might stop and think where you're going for a second and think about the bridge that you're on. So instead of, in the learning context, that means if you're presenting something that's overlaying digital information on the real world, you might stop and think, why am I seeing this? How is this being presented to me? It almost seems like magic in some ways. So you're thinking about the process of that information being delivered to you rather than trying to consume the content that that person wants to purvey to you through that medium. So here's an example from my lab a lot of years ago. This is a computer vision algorithm based on image recognition. We're showing this off at the booth as well. The card image is being recognized and then any digital contents is being displayed over it. In this case, it's a video. Volunteering at TEDx Kyoto, where we are now. So that's just a hint, right? That's just a playing card. So now the digital content, anything from the internet, is now being connected to like a piece of paper, right? It's just one very rudimentary example of this technology. And it's already much more advanced than this. Okay, analogy number two. The automation of the learning process is very key when thinking about augmented reality, in this, especially in learning contexts. I'm almost hesitant to tell the story, but I will anyway. But so in elementary school, I got caught cheating a couple of times, right? You have these reading assessments, and the answers are in the back of the book, right? So, of course, a couple of times I opened the book, read maybe the first paragraph, and went right to the back of the book and read the answers, right? And, of course, that was cheating. It robbed me of the process of reading that whole paragraph and getting the practice. Maybe it was a root thing, but that idea, that concept is being exacerbated by these technologies. And one good example of this is botany, right? Let's say that you're learning to be a botanist. You're walking, taking a hike somewhere. You notice a nice flower, and you have to kind of start processing a bunch of information to kind of come down on that species, right? What is this flower? What season is it? Where am I in the world? How's the weather been recently? How many petals are on this particular? Where is it growing? Are there a lot together? But with augmented reality, it's you can just either take a snapshot of it or the whatever algorithm you're using will take a picture of that and go out on the web and analyze it and compare it to thousands of other pictures of flowers. The phone, if you're using a phone, knows where you are, GPS location. So all that information gets mashed together and then curated, and you get shown the species of flower to a pretty accurate degree. So that whole process of discovery, of the learning self-questioning process, is almost robbed with us, almost like what I did going to the back of the book with the answers. Now, this doesn't happen all the time. This is going to be highly dependent on how we design the learning process through this medium as well. But in short, that's what's going to be happening a lot more with this just-in-time information. The self-curation, the discovery process, might be diminished in many ways when we use this for learning purposes. So what does this mean for our brains? Our brains are starting to get, you know, sometimes we get much too much information, right, already with this mobile era. We're getting notifications every other minute. We're being overloaded with a lot of information. And a lot of the ways this is also going to be exacerbated in this new era of getting information given to us without being asked. So we can take a lot of research, a lot of hints that we've learned from the mobile era. We're still learning a lot with just that era itself already moving into this augmented era. But things like compulsion loops, right? We want a piece of information, social media, and business models, unfortunately, build this a lot into the way they parse information out in little bits, so we have to keep coming back to them. We get a little dopamine rush, put the phone back, and then that keeps going in this compulsion loop. And we get starting to get this, everyone heard of nomophobia? Nomophobia? No mobile phobia? That's right. Your fear. So I work at a university, and I take a census of students, and increasingly, the biggest cause of stress is low battery, no Wi-Fi, right? You're being disconnected. So this fear, right, of not being connected to your digital self, your digital person, is also going to be exacerbated, because if you're getting information right now, let's, for example, memory is also being affected, right? So nobody remembers phone numbers anymore because we got them in their pockets. So very soon we're going to get facial recognition into these algorithms, so we're going to get look at someone and maybe their name would appear above their face. Does this mean we don't remember names as much? Where we're going, self-navigation, and things like that. So the long-term, short-term movement of information on our brains might be affected in very profound ways. We're still not very sure about that. The business models affect that very much. So schools in general, what does that look like in this new era? There's a couple of different possibilities, but we're starting to learn, already in the mobile era, we start to understand the value of learning things as we do them, right? The traditional university lecture is starting to be less and less useful. You can just watch that on demand, right, on a YouTube video. Recently, there was a boycott at a university in India because too many of their professors were lecturing, and they demanded they could get put online so they didn't have to travel to campus as much. So this is just part of that that's happening in the future. And companies are, as our university, they're asking us, they want more the ability to train at the job site as they go. And this is going to happen more and more with the augmented reality. Whatever you're looking at, wherever you are, this information is going to get curated to you, and you're going to get contextual learning for what you're doing, who you're doing it with, and where you are. So what that means for classrooms is a lot of different things. You need a reason to bring people together. You need a reason to curate. So a little more coaching, a little more facilitation, of course. We already know this in the mobile era, but this is going to get worse in the augmented era. Okay, big topic here. There's a lot of, as a researcher, I've bumped into this quite often already, legal and ethical issues around using this, especially in schools. There's a bunch of different ideas and concepts around this that can be potentially dangerous and, quite frankly, a little bit frightening for teachers. So the first is about data collection, right? Your mobile phone is already your leash, right? It knows where you're going, what you're looking at. If you take out your phone, it knows how you're moving your hands, right, with the accelerometer inside your phone, this is only going to get exacerbated with augmented reality. Your eye movements are going to be tracked. Your voice is going to be analyzed. Your location movements and your interactions with other people. And this together can be a very frightening picture if somehow this were collected and used against you in unsavory ways. And it could be potentially dangerous to students as well. Legal issues around this too, there are still a lot of question marks as far as if I tie some digital contents to a physical place, can that be copyrighted? What's the legal standpoint of me putting my digital contents overlaid on somebody else's face, perhaps, or on somebody's lawn, perhaps? Right? There's all these big questions, legal questions, about putting digital contents, connecting digital contents to things of your physical nature or your personality, right? We have these things, the deepfakes are coming out, right? Augmented reality, where people are able to look and feel and sound like announcers on TV, popular people, presidents, and they're changing, putting words into their mouths using this technology. Is that going to be legal moving forward or not? Okay, so that's a little bit, some analogies, some things. So I'd like to share a little bit about some of the things that our research group is doing with this technology. Excuse me. It's a group called MAVER, Mixed Augmented Virtual Realities and Learning in Japan. And we found that one of the big powerful things about this technology is just getting people up and moving them around, because their learning goes with them and it's contextual to who you're with. So we had this community rally in Fukuchiyama, it's a northern part of Kyoto Prefecture. I like to call it upstate Kyoto. And we grouped people, students, with people in the community and gave them an app and told them to go out and look for triggers out in the community. And when they, for example, this is the lobby of the local library, they got triggered, and this video is giving them instructions to go up to a specific room in that library and take a very specific route. Because up the stairs, instead of taking the elevator in this particular library, on the wall is a history of the city of Fukuchiyama, where this is based. So you get to see some historical background. And what I could do with this technology is actually, the wall is written in Japanese, and so the computer vision algorithm knows the date on that wall, and it overlays the English information on top of that. So there's a little bit of language learning going on with this as well. So they're going to walk up, so maybe you can see that in just a second here. So here's the first wall here. Another marker that'll get loaded. And so what was a Japanese written on the wall now has the English written on top of that. So they'll follow this kind of course, getting up to one room up on the top floor, and then there's a lockbox there with a cipher that's also an augmented reality. And they have to remember or recall or go back and find that information on the stairs to open that box. And then they get another sheet, which will give them a hint to go somewhere else in the city. So they're running around the city doing these challenges, these hints, these clues, and this gives them a more immersive feel to it, because now we're giving a narrative, some video, some more immersive video media that go along with this kind of scavenger hunt activity. One more project is called the Before I Graduate project. We also did in Fukuchiyama. Just put a piece, big old piece of paper up on the wall and asked students to share some hope, some wish, some aspiration to accomplish in the future, and then write some graffiti or a message or a picture representing that on that piece of paper on the wall. And then they slapped a computer vision enhanced image right next to their message, and they were able to connect video testimony to their message. And so other students would come up to the wall and see a message that kind of related to their wishes, their goals, their dreams, and they could pick up that video information from the wall, and then the app also allowed them to share or connect with that student if they had similar hopes and dreams. And one good thing about this is, because now this is connecting physical and digital, you have this nice shared space, this physical space, this reason to come together in this one place, semi-private, right? But because the wall's gone now, it's just a piece of paper, we had to tear it down. Oh, that's me and my message, a picture of it there. My hope and dream was that their hopes and dreams would be realized. Yeah. But we took all that information out and then just put it into a book form, right? All the triggers were the same for augmented computer vision algorithm, and all their essays put into a book, and that was given to the students so they can go back and revisit that at a later time. All right, so that's a couple of examples. Now, moving forward, there are some very important concepts and ideas that we need to think about to make this transition into this era, the era that I claim, this augmented mass medium era, to make it more better for humanity, basically. And they revolve around these concepts here. Digital citizenship, which basically means literacy for people using it. Why are you seeing what you're seeing, right? We still are trying to grasp, like when we Google something, why is it on the first page of the results, right? That's still a little bit fuzzy in a lot of our minds. But moving into a more empathic computing era, like when we're talking to our voice assistant or we're getting information curated to us when we get the phone on the face era that's coming very shortly, those search results aren't a page. You get one or two results at most, and it's given to you many times without asking for it. So being able to have the knowledge or at least the basic literacy to know that, to question that information and where it's coming from and why it's being shown to me. A lot of these business models rely on giving you information, and advertising dollars are being generated big time into showing you information that's relevant to where you are to kind of guide you, or foot traffic, things like that. Privacy by design, right? So augmented era, you're going to be uploading more information than you're receiving. So right now in a Google search, you're uploading your query, but then you're getting a ton of search results back. But in this era, you're uploading your whereabouts at all time, your eye movement, your body movement, a lot of these other very high bandwidth data points you're uploading, but then you're getting very little back because it's being curated off-site most likely with some AI algorithm or something like that. So we're giving more information away than we're receiving in this era. And that's good. That information is going to be more and more valuable as we move forward, even monetarily. And having to be able to put a price tag on that, or even being able to know who's holding that data and who's mallying that into something that they can curate and show back to us is going to be very important. So what I mean by privacy by design is there's a couple of like core values that we need to build into these augmented reality platforms, all right? We don't, especially, don't take any more data than you actually need, right? Right now, a lot of internet companies, thanks in part to the GDPR, it's changing a lot, the new laws in Europe, but it's really the standard practice for even a lot of commercial operations to make this blanket user agreement that will allow them to just collect anything they want or collect too much because they think they might need it or they might get in trouble for collecting it in the future. This is going to be very problematic, that type of model, in the future with augmented reality, because you're going to start to be able to build psychological profiles. You're going to be able to maybe even exploit learning difficulties or, you know, problems in emotional problems moving into the future by directing and knowing that data, like something like eye movements or how much you move your head and things like that. So that's going to be very important moving forward in the future. And protecting our data, of course, that sensitive data that I told moving forward is going to be more important than ever to be protected. And then net neutrality, right? So the idea of the digital divide might be exacerbated with this technology because now you can lock information into a physical place or into a picture or into a person. So you, instead of having an open internet where it doesn't matter where you are, what you're looking for information, you could potentially to be at a certain place or looking at a certain person or be with somebody to get information. So that could come with a price tag or a premium, and that means a lot for us as educators moving forward. So we have to look for that as well. So, and a lot of these new companies, there's a new one called Magic Leap, if you haven't heard of that. So they've one of the biggest rounds of investment ever, right? And they understand this. They're looking to be the new Google search, right? They're looking to surpass Google search so they can show you and curate information for you just like Google does, and they get all that ad revenue. So, right, that's the billions and billions of dollars into this company that hasn't even really produced much yet, because they understand the power of being able to control the pipes of information to you. And so net neutrality is going to be very important for that moving forward as well. All right. Was that too quick? So if anything was fuzzy or anything was, you want some clarification on it, we have a website for our research group, maver.site. That's my own personal website and my own personal email. But we have a whole group of researchers in Japan doing a whole bunch of cool stuff. We have one with us today. His name's Josh. He's doing a study on VR and anxiety reduction, pre-study abroad stuff. It's very interesting. We have some people doing academic writing in VR. We have people doing a bunch of language learning stuff with augmented reality. There's a lot of cool stuff happening. So if you want to contact me, I can maybe curate you or show you the person that might be most relevant to talk to in our group. Or you can go straight to our group. Just search for Maver on Google, and you can find that information as well. I think that's about all the time that I have, though. If we have a question, time for a question or two, and if there are any, I'd love to take them. Is there any? If not, that's okay, too. Again, my name's Eric. I really appreciate your time today, and I hope you got something out of it. And if you're around, come by booth 110. I'd like to talk to you and introduce ourselves, get to know each other. Thanks again for listening, everyone. All right, hello, it's Eric here, coordinator of Maver. I'm here now in Austin, Texas, participating in South by Southwest EDU. We have a couple of members here representing Maver today, having some good conversations with educators, developers, pretty much from all over the world. And right now, I'm sitting with someone that I've started to do a little bit of work with, and he has come to participate and help out in some ways with what we're doing with Maver and some of the projects that we're developing as a group. Hello.
Hello.
You want to tell us a little bit about who you are and why you're here?
Sure. My name is JR, and I am an educator full-time up in North Texas, and I'm also a freelance developer.
To talk about why you're here, we got kind of introduced to each other because you started working on a project that we are working on as a group, doing augmented reality in education. Have you ever done, or basically tell me about your knowledge of AR before we got introduced recently?
So my knowledge of AR prior to working on this project was pretty limited. I would say, you know, things like Pokemon Go and stuff like that was about the extent of it. But I've always wondered, you know, how just about the potential for augmented reality in education. Just being a K-12 educator, you know, I'm always looking for the newest and greatest things that can help out for learning, and I just see there could be so much potential with this, and that's kind of what caught my attention and inspired me to get involved with this project.
So JR's been helping us. We have a booth here in the exposition area of South by Southwest EDU, and we've had a bunch of people come by, and JR has been kind of helping us develop some of the products and applications, especially the orientation project that we're working on. How do you feel about the interest in this kind of technology, the interest in from educators and people coming by the booth as you've experienced this in the last couple of days?
Yeah, there's been a variety of interest. Lots of, you know, South By just brings in all sorts of different individuals. You know, there's teachers here, librarians, principals, you know, things like that from K-12. You got higher ed folks, industry, creative people. There's just all different walks and all types of careers represented here. And so I guess this is, it's been interesting to me to see that there's, you know, a big variety. It's not just like a product that could help one person, but this is kind of an idea or a system that could help out in a variety of industries.
And I understand that you've been helping us out with a lot of technical stuff, so I'm really impressed that you have this technical knowledge, but you also have some very practical teaching experience and maybe even administrative experience. Well, as a person with some teaching experience and maybe even policy experience looking at schools, do you have, after working and seeing some of this technology and working on this project, do you have any input or ideas or cautionary tales, perhaps anything around this technology that you would think might be perhaps maybe a hurdle for implementation in schools, or maybe something that it could very be well afforded to help? Any comments on any of that?
Yeah, well, that's a very thorough question. But I can tell you that, you know, a lot of times in education, especially, you know, when you're dealing with children, there's a lot of, I think it's sad, but a lot of times, you know, the cutting edge technology tends to get, you know, it encounters a lot of resistance. There are a lot of hurdles. Sometimes it's things, you know, like a privacy concern. Sometimes it's things where it's just, you know, incompatible through the bureaucratic, you know, mess of tech systems that they have, and just all sorts of issues around that kind of compliance. And sometimes it's just a mindset. You know, teachers sometimes are a generation ahead, a generation or two or more behind their students, and so they're not as a whole, I don't want to stereotype them, but a lot of times educators aren't, you know, on the forefront of that. Now, the ones who are, a lot of times experience pushback based on the system, and so it's kind of can be discouraging. But the thing that I really liked about this orientation project is that it is so straightforward. There's nothing that I see about it that would be a hang up in terms of tech implementation. Like, school districts all over the country use Google in so many different forms, whether it's just the Google Apps for Education, Google Classroom, Google Suite, all that stuff. And so that's not going to be a problem. Everyone knows how to submit a Google form, students and teachers alike. And, you know, so, and everything else about it is just what content you put on it. So you don't, it's really, there's a lot of potential, but I could see there being a lot less resistance to adopt the technology. If this were, you know, it's just a matter of awareness, I think, getting the word out there, letting people experience it. And, you know, I could think of maybe 10, 12 different uses, but if I brought 100 people by here, they would all think of another 10 or 12, and there's thousands of ways it could be used.
Well, that's brilliant. I mean, you're actually helping us get that awareness out, and so thank you for that as well. So maybe that reads into maybe one last question. So you just said, like, maybe you can think of a couple of uses for it. After experiencing especially the orientation project or some of the other things that we've introduced over the booth today, is there, like, a specific case use or something that you feel like you might be able to use it in the future or maybe want to use it in the future?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the obvious use is just, you know, enhancing any type of content that's being taught, whether it's, you know, math or science or, you know, using it in literature or anything like that. It's easy to jump to the content. You know, I even taught speech and Spanish before, and, like, right away I'm thinking, okay, this could be great to simulate an audience in speech or to have translations in Spanish or things like that. But beyond that, what I'd really like to see would be more of how the augmented reality can help students in their, like, social emotional development. Just experiencing, you know, the world that our students live in is very different than the one that we grew up in, and just being able to better kind of bridge that gap between the technical world and I think I could see applications of it with just numerous ways that it could help with that social-emotional learning that sometimes gets neglected when it comes to implementing tech.
That's an interesting point of view. We have a couple of members. There's a catchphrase going on that's VR, especially, sometimes AR, could be an empathy machine, because you're given agency and you're brought to a different place or experience life through a different person. So that's interesting that you have that growth idea in mind when it comes down to like the potential of the technology.
Yeah, can I add to that just a little bit?
Sure, go ahead.
Empathy is something that I really think is important in today's world. You know, when we are filled with selfies and things like that, it's all about us and social media. And so any way that technology could enhance empathy is always something that I would look for. And I just think, you know, some of the most important things we teach students are how to interact with others. You know, like if we're teaching them how to give a good handshake, you know, but we don't have important people that they can necessarily meet to practice, well, maybe they could do that through an AR app, you know. There's, you know, just all those types of interactions and things that they need to know how to handle and how to navigate that. You can't always simulate in a school environment, but maybe you could with the help of technology.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. There's an interesting paradox with this, right? So using too much technology kind of decreases your social skills because you're in front of your phone all the time, but we can use AR to kind of push back a little bit using the technology to feed back.
Well, why not? I mean, we talk to students all the time, like, what would you do if you saw somebody getting bullied or something? And, you know, it's one thing to just give a textbook answer. Oh, I would stand up to it, or I would, you know, go tell the teacher. But, like, if you could actually, you know, have scenarios in a way that is controlled, you know, so that it's kind of like practice with the real world. And I think that there could be a lot of potential in that space. It might be something that gets overlooked when it's as easy to be like, oh, I could do, you know, fractions and have the answer pop up. Sure. Mm-hmm. But there's so much more that we could do with it.
Right. So the technology is getting more human oriented, right? We, instead of writing words, we're expressing ourselves in like 3D form or in music and video. So why not, you know, use that expression to teach more emotional constructs in the context.
Technology is with us everywhere. We have wearable technology. I mean, there's so many, it's becoming a lot more personal. So we just need to make sure that we do appeal to that human aspect.
Well, beautiful. Any other comments or words about what happened this week or anything else? No?
Yes? No.
All right, great. Well, thanks a lot, JR, for sitting down to talk with us. And we're very happy with Mayward to meet a new friend like you. And thanks very much for talking with us today.
All right, you bet.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. That's been episode 5 of the Jolt's Maver Sig podcast. All right, hope you enjoyed that. We'll have another episode out relatively soon, probably before the Jolt International Conference in November. I have a couple of good segments being worked on right now for this podcast for episode 6. If you want to submit something, we're always interested. You can just record something on your phone or use professional equipment. Anything is great as long as the audio is audible. This is your host, Josh, signing off. Happy Mavering, everyone.